for the full year ending March 31, 2012. The format for our presentation is unchanged. Following these introductory remarks, our acting FD, Nick Chevis, will get up and review the financial numbers in some detail, and then I'll return for somewhat fuller and more qualitative discussion about our strategy and performance of each of our divisions. Notwithstanding the fact that we have delivered results in line with expectations, both revenues, profits, and cash flow. In fact, cash flow is slightly better than we forecast. Fact remains that we and all of our shareholders have gone through a very difficult trading environment since our six-month update. And I have to say our determination, however, to deliver our plans through what we had already forecasted would be an extraordinary year is undiminished. And we do derive confidence from the near uniform delivery of our plans across our businesses. And even in the one division, UK Bus, that has faced tougher trading conditions going forward than we had forecasted, we remain convinced that the changes to that business that we've been talking about with you through the first year that I've been here is still the right way forward and the best solution to our current circumstances. The performance in all of our businesses, we think, has been delivered in a way that it does enable growth over the long term. In students, the recovery is on track. We've delivered margins in the second half as we forecasted and for the full year. Transit operations remain very reliable and stable, generating very healthy profits at very low capital. The Greyhound story just gets more and more exciting with the rollout of its new businesses, and I think it's best summarized by the fact that it's more than doubled profits in the last 2 years. UK Rail continues its solid performance, and I think our team has demonstrated its capacity and its capability in being a credible bidding force in the new franchising environment, as we are the only company that has qualified for all four of the first franchises. So in four of our five companies, if anything, the news has gotten slightly better and our confidence is greater than it was at the six-month period. The lone exception is obviously UK Bus, and even in that case, we delivered in the current period only slightly worse than our expectations, with revenue growth of 1.6%. Unlike our other divisions, however, UK Bus does face tougher trading conditions than we had forecasted, and we have said that we do not see a prospect of it being able to generate additional revenues or to find cost savings sufficient to offset the extraordinary cost increases that it faces above the normal inflationary pressures this year. And obviously, when I get back up, I'll talk about this in somewhat more detail. In the board's view, the First Group story and its prospects remain largely unchanged. I mean, even in UK Bus, we've discussed publicly the need to change that business. Recent events have only emphasized our need for even greater speed in that regard, but we think, and the board believes, the ultimate destination is the same. We will deliver a rejuvenated, a healthy and growing UK bus business. In rail, the transition to new franchises means a reduction in cash flows for a time, but this has always been understood in forecasts and understood as a feature of the franchising process. The news from North America just gets more promising. And when the board looks at the turnaround that's occurring in students and the payoff that we are already deriving for the turnaround that's completed in Greyhound, it gives it renewed confidence that it has the management with the discipline and the energy to deliver the plans we're talking about in UK Bus. Accordingly, the board sees the story as unchanged over the long term and remains committed to its current dividend policy. And with that summary, I would ask Nick to stand up and take you through the financial numbers. Nick?
Thank you, Jim, and good morning, everyone. I'm going to start by looking at the key financial highlights of the business before breaking that down by division, and then looking at some more detail on the balance sheet and cash flow. Overall, our performance has been in line with expectations, albeit slightly below where we estimated to be at the start of the year. Operating profit for the period was £428 million. This is 6.2% down on last year, reflecting the full-year effect of 10-11 student performance, as well as the deteriorating trading conditions in UK bus. Lower financing costs partially offset the effect on earnings, with full-year EPS of 40 pence a share, a reduction of 2.7%. During the year, we implemented further actions to de-risk our UK bus pension scheme. These resulted in an exceptional non-cash credit to the P&L of £73 million. We have continued to reduce net debt whilst increasing our capital investments in the business. The net cash inflow was £119 million in the period, slightly ahead of our quarter three estimate. This has contributed to our strong liquidity position, with almost £800 million of committed facility headroom and free cash at the year end. Looking at a summary of the results, here we can see total group revenues grew by 4.1% to almost £6.7 billion. This period includes an extra week's trading for all divisions except rail. Excluding this extra week, revenues were up 2.9%. We continue to benefit from lower financing costs as a result of both lower debt and lower interest rates on our US dollar denominated debt. Profit before tax is up by £153 million. You can see this is primarily due to the movement in exceptional items. Last year, exceptional charges included both the First Great Western contract provision and the First Student Recovery Plan. This year, exceptional items are materially lower. After the one-time pensions credit I mentioned earlier, exceptional items are a net credit of £39.4 million. Tax costs are higher at £50.1 million compared to last year of £17 million, as a result of this higher profit. The board is proposing a final dividend of 16.05 pence, up 7% versus last year. This brings the full-year dividend to 23.67 pence per share, a total of £113.8 million, an increase of £7.5 million. I'm now going to briefly review the financial performance of each of the five operating divisions, starting with Student, where we continue to make good progress. Revenues were up 0.7% versus last year to $2.5 billion. After adjusting for the extra week of trading revenues were down 1.3%, in line with expectation, including the full year effect of last year's performance. Operating margins were down 1.3% in the period to 6.8% versus 8.1% last year. These results included both one-time costs relating to the student recovery plan and higher fuel costs. The student recovery plan continues to deliver in line with our expectations, with savings being achieved across all of the six key areas. We are particularly pleased with the results of the driver labor productivity improvements that are generating savings from a range of initiatives. Accordingly, our margin performance has improved as the year has progressed. We are reporting second half operating margins up on last year at 11.5% versus 11.4% last year. And we expect this improvement will continue with 12-13 margins on course to exceed those in 10-11. Now moving to transit. US dollar revenues were up 3.6% to $1.24 billion in the period. Adjusting for the extra week, revenues were up 2%. Operating profits were after higher costs for benefit plans of $3 million and the wider use of DriveCam technology costing $0.9 million. DriveCam helps reduce costs over time and improve service quality for our customers. As a result, operating profits were marginally down on last year, with an operating margin of 7.2% versus 7.5% last year. In Greyhound, we continue to deliver strong results. Revenues were up 6.5% in the period to $1.05 billion. Like-for-like revenues were 4.1% up in the year, partly driven by the continued success of Greyhound Express. Dollar profits were up 30% in the year to $81 million. This means that we have doubled Greyhound profits in 2 years. And this is after absorbing over $17 million in increased fuel costs this year. Operating margins improved in both the United States and Canadian businesses. As we indicated at the half year, the Canadian Profit Improvement Program has now returned the Canadian business to a small profit from the losses that we made in 2009-10. The US business reported an increase to a sustainable double-digit operating margin of 10% versus 9.3% last year. Our UK bus business delivered a steady performance in the year. Revenue was up 1.7%. Like-for-like revenue growth was 1.6%. This average masks a deterioration in certain parts of our business. The growing economic north-south divide has resulted in considerably lower growth rates in Scotland and the north of England, where approximately 60% of our UK bus passenger revenue is generated. As a result, we only achieved like-for-like revenue growth of 0.6% in Scotland and the north of England, compared with 3.3% in the rest of the business. These challenging trading conditions resulted in an operating profit of £134.4 million, a decrease of 9.7% versus last year. This reduced operating margins to 11.6%, a decrease of 1.5% versus last year. Given this continued economic effect on our bus results, and as we indicated at the pre-close announcement, we do not expect revenue growth rates will be sufficient to offset the impact of reduced government subsidies and funding to the industry, as well as an estimated £11 million increase in fuel costs. We are therefore estimating that UK bus operating margins for 12-13 will be approximately 8%. We have a comprehensive plan to reform the operating model and restore margins, and Tim will take you through that. In the period, we made a number of small disposals and depot closures, including the sale of our German bus business in H1 for 5.5 million euros and our London-based Northumberland Park depot for 14 million pounds, for which the proceeds were received at the beginning of 12-13. Our UK rail business continues to exceed expectations, with strong revenues increasing by 10.4% to £2.5 billion, and like-for-like revenues grew by 8.4%. Operating profits increased further to £110 million, an increase of 1.7% versus last year. This performance includes a strong contribution from TPE. In January, the Trans-Pennine Express extension period started, which runs to 2015, and this secondary period should deliver margins closer to the industry average. As you can see here, all our train operating companies delivered a strong performance. Like-for-like revenue growth continues to see an improving trend, up from 5.3% last year to 8.4% this year. Volumes grew by 3.8%. The group has continued to prioritize cash generation to support capital investment, reduce debt, and pay dividends. We generated a net cash inflow of £119 million, and this is slightly above our quarter three guidance. We applied this inflow to debt reduction. I have shown here the cash flow movements, and there is also a cash flow table in the appendices in the slide pack. On top of the working capital inflow last year of £75 million, we generated a further £21 million this year. Pension payments in excess of the income statement charge are £43.6 million higher than last year due to the increased cash contributions of £32.6 million and a reduction in the current service charge. Disposal proceeds of £63 million include £40 million from US property disposals, with the Washington DC sale accounting for $43 million. In addition, there is 5.5 million euros from the sale of our German bus business and £8 million of rail assets transferred to Network Rail. The equivalent asset investment in the year was £367 million, including the cash capex investment of £294 million, and a breakdown of this is included on the next slide. Dividend payments include £108.8 million to group shareholders, up £7.4 million, and £19 million of TransPennine Express-related dividends to Keolis, the minority shareholder. During the year, we have increased our investment in the business while generating cash to pay down debt. Overall fixed asset additions increased in the year to £323 million, an increase of almost £60 million over last year. When combined with the UK bus operating leases, the total equivalent investment in the year rises to £366.9 million, an increase of almost £80 million. The group continues to have strong liquidity. Committed facility headroom and free cash was almost £800 million. We have also maintained prudent levels of headroom under our banking covenants and remain committed to an investment grade rating. We have continued to reduce net debt in the year with a reduction of £112 million. During the forthcoming transition year, when combined with the disposals from rebalancing the UK bus portfolio, we expect net debt to remain broadly neutral during the year. So with that, I'll hand you back to Tim to take you through the business review.
Thanks, Nick. So taking the businesses in turn, we start with First Student. And as we said, this recovery is proceeding as we expected, and we're quite pleased with what is transpiring. But in looking at this, I do think it's appropriate to reflect on the size, the massive size of this business. I mean, it's almost 600 depots spread across something like 40 states and seven Canadian provinces. It's some 1,400 contracts. Our competitors are about a fraction of our size, and most are just tiny. I mean, the significance of these numbers is that this is a massively complex management change program that the First Student team has taken on. Linda Birtwistle and her team have delivered really a new business model for First Student, which they call the First Student Way, and they've driven it all the way through the business. And what it's resulted in is lower unit costs, which has allowed them to commit to a higher annual savings plan, up to $100 million now from the $65 million we went publicly with before. They're improving the offer to these school districts. They are experiencing substantial increases in customer service scores in their surveys, all while delivering record safety performance. There are plain challenges in continuing on the trajectory to hitting double-digit margins by 13-14. But it seems to be plain that Linda and her team have created ownership of this change program all the way through the business. And most importantly, they've achieved momentum in introducing change through the place. And this slide gives you some I think, view of what we've done and when we've done it and what has led to this change and the progress we've made. Obviously, we had to take time to analyze the problem and put together a comprehensive plan, and we did inject additional resources for the first year to accomplish that. When we moved into the implementation phase, the first thing we did was simplify management by taking a layer out, and then by putting together the playbook that could be promulgated across the network to bring the team together in the delivery of this program. As Nick mentioned, our first wins were really in the efficient deployment of the drivers, but following that, we immediately turned to the other major area of cost, and that's engineering. We created model depots in each of our divisions and have spent the year kind of moving that more efficient organization of work to each of our locations. We're now moving into actual management more closely of the drivers when they're out on the road. So we've added a component to our focus GPS management system, actually the ZONAR portion of it, that allows us to assess actually the driving behaviors out on the road. So we can see when they're behaving in an unsafe manner and wasting fuel by starting quickly, stopping quickly. We've used similar technology in our transit division in Greyhound and UK Bus, and in all the cases, we've been able to generate substantial savings in fuel. We're also moving to kind of a more granular analysis in engineering. So we're deploying a complete suite of standard job times and not just handling the major jobs that we talked about with you before. In phase two, we're kind of driving this comprehensively, all of the KPIs, to every one of our locations and not just being content with the changes at the major locations. And as we've done all of this, the commercial team, the new commercial team we put in place and talked to you about before, is turning in another solid year with retention rates well above 90%. We've landed about 300 new buses from conversions. Our charter business continues to improve, especially our third-party charter. So all in all, it puts us in a very positive position. We're quite satisfied with where we are in the student recovery program. That takes us to First Transit. Again, this is a business, I think, whose size is sometimes not fully appreciated. Transit is larger than Greyhound. They operate over 12,000 vehicles. They maintain another 40,000 vehicles. And the real reason for the success and the steady performance of this unit is because of the experience and expertise of the team. Brad Thomas and his direct reports average over 20 years experience in the transit business itself. Indeed, Linda Burtwistle, who runs our student division, we came to student from transit, which she used to run following her stint with Stagecoach. And it's really been this team's expertise and ability to bid and be constantly refreshing the business that has been the key to the success. And they've continued to do that this year, and the most recent examples of which are on the screen before you. So it's just for transit a steady performance, which we're quite happy with. Takes me to Greyhound, which completes the positive news coming out of North America. And the Greyhound story continues to be this rollout of Greyhound Express. When I was with you 6 months ago, I said it is surprising how fast this has grown. And over the last 6 months, the growth has gotten even more explosive. I think when I talked to you last time, I said that Greyhound Express was making up something like close to 10% of the business. Well, now it's well in excess of 20%. And depending on the period involved, that is the load factors on particular buses, in particular periods, it's been as high as 30% of the business. It has just been an explosive and successful growth. Dave Leach, the president of Greyhound, and his team have driven this growth of this network. And you can see here in this map that we've displayed the core Greyhound network. And in yellow, what you're looking at is the spread of Greyhound Express. So it started in the Midwest. We moved it to the Northeast Corridor. It's come down the East Coast to base in Atlanta, out into Florida, and we've now moved it into Texas, California, and even Western Canada. This has just been a tremendous success. And just to remind you, Greyhound Express is the transformation of this business from selling trips, which is what the old core Greyhound did, to selling a trip, a specific reserve seat on a particular bus, a new bus, Wi-Fi enabled, leather seats, ample leg room, and it's this new product that's really captured the attention of the public. I mean, it seems to be clear to us the way forward in Greyhound. I mean, this is a very promising opportunity, and while we need to continue to exercise capital discipline, the fact is we need to feed this network with more buses, because as we do, it continues to be rewarded with growth. You know, at the same time, we have seen, as we've put in these new buses, the quality of our service and our reliability has gone up, which is an inevitable consequence of putting in these new buses. We've also expanded our sale of ticketing through third-party channels. So I talked to you last time about our path-breaking deal with 7-Eleven, where their 6,400 outlets are selling, can sell Greyhound tickets now. We've added to that a deal with Ace Cash Express and their 1,500 outlets. So we're continuing to increase the ways people can access the Greyhound network. At the same time, we talked about, and Nick reflected on in the numbers, the fact that we spent the last year eliminating the losses from our Canadian operation. It's now turned positive. We continue to work with provincial authorities about putting together subsidy packages that will allow them to have the kind of bus network they're looking for. But in addition, the important news is we aren't neglecting commercial opportunity in Canada. So we have moved Greyhound Express into Alberta, and with that success, we expect to follow it with exploiting good commercial opportunities in Quebec and Ontario. And we've even followed up the movement, further opportunity of our Bolt bus business to the Pacific Northwest to go up against Amtrak. And this is an interesting kind of sideline. You know, Bolt bus is the plane premier brand in the marketplace. There's open highway between Bolt Bus and any of its competitors. We've seen that in the Northeast Corridor. And so we've decided to position this as the brand that can take on passenger rail. And we're going up against Amtrak in the Pacific Northwest because we think the Bolt Bus brand is so strong, it's the one that can break through to rail passengers who think that rail offers amenities that bus can't match. So this continues to be an extremely exciting story, and it just goes from strength to strength. And that takes me to UK Bus, which in fairness, as Nick reported, in the current period that we're reporting on, delivered just slightly below our expectations with growth of 1.6%, albeit with lower profits as a result of the fuel bill and the reduction in growth, especially in the north. The issues I want to talk to you about with bus are primarily internal issues. But before turning to them, it is worth reflecting on some of the numbers that Nick brought out and the fact that our growth rates were so different in our northern companies from our southern companies. And that is, in the south, we delivered growth in excess of 3%, much closer to our competitors, where our operations in the north, the growth was less than 1%. And our operations, which are about 60% in the north, are also heavily weighted toward urban operations, which distinguishes the first group network. So it seems to me plain, I just want to make this one point. The first group, our business, has been disproportionately affected by certain exogenous factors. However, having said that, I want to emphasize we have a tremendous network with a great commercial footprint. And this may not be our best season, but our best season will return. And the fact that we are exposed to the urban transport challenge is a long-term commercial opportunity. I believe for our bus business, but for all of our business, it's the ability to deliver solutions to the problem of congestion that are the real long-term opportunity for companies like ours. You know, a lot of people in the bus business talk about the important role buses have in solving the climate change problem. And I would not disagree with that commentary. I support it wholeheartedly. But the fact of the matter is climate change is going to be addressed by a number of solutions, probably most profoundly by disruptive technology. The problem that doesn't go away is congestion. And the trend in world history, including in the UK, is a migration to urban areas. And it's the companies that are participating in that phenomenon and that can offer solutions that are going to have staying power. And, you know, as a footnote to this kind of digression on our long-term opportunity, I would ask you to consider the two fastest growing cities in the UK in the first decade of this millennium. And I'll give you a hint. London isn't one of them. It's Leeds and Bristol, prime first group bus territory, and the first place we've turned to rejuvenate this product. So turning from the long-term opportunity, which we still firmly believe in, and our immediate challenge. The bus challenge that we face with UK Bus, we have not hesitated to acknowledge that there is an unflattering comparison between our company and our competitors and the growth that's been able to deliver. And accordingly, we recruited new management in form of Giles Fernley to refresh our brand and refresh our offer to the public. And over the course of the last year, Giles has been assembling his team, analyzing the network, putting his plans together, bringing forward change. And indeed, I can add to that news in that just today we can confirm that Giles has added a chief operating officer in the form of Jerome Weimar, who comes to us in his former position as the managing director transport for Serco. And Jerome is going to bring his program and project management expertise to add to the team to deliver this change program I'm going to talk about. And complementary to putting this team together and his plan, we announced last year that we were going to refresh our bus fleet itself with 1,000 new buses. We talked about the fact that we were putting in £27 million to deliver new smart ticketing options. And all of that has proceeded according to plan. What did not happen according to plan is the environment in which we're attempting to pull off this transformation. We had assumed that we had residual pricing power in this network, which would give us the time and space to deliver this change program. We were wrong. The economy was worse than we had forecasted, and we were surprised by the very low yield we got out of the attempted price increase in January. As a result of that, we did make the call that we did not see any prospect that we could generate revenues sufficient to cover the extraordinary cost increases we're seeing in this business this year, which we estimate to be about £50 million beyond the normal inflationary pressures. And as Nick said, it's made up of the cutback in government support, in BSOG, and concessionary fares, as well as the fuel bill. Now, in fairness, the former has been forecasted for a long time, and we had said we thought we could absorb that in our normal efficiencies. But again, the economic conditions that we had forecasted when saying all that proved to be incorrect. So then the issue really is, what are we doing about it? And the answer is, we're doing what we were going to do, only faster. We're convinced that the reformation of our bus network that we have talked about previously is the right answer to even our current situation. And it really has three key elements. The first is repositioning and rebalancing the portfolio. This is the faster part. It is about disposing of parts of our network which we think are of much greater value to other companies. And based on the depot sales we've conducted this year, we believe we can complete this program in the coming year. Undoubtedly, regulatory review could affect the timing, but we think we'll be able to maintain enough flexibility in this program to deal with that. And in any event, we think it is a question of timing and not the ultimate result that will allow us to complete this program. The second element is improving operating discipline and efficiencies. This is already taking place where Giles has put together five teams that are going to each of our more than 80 depots to enforce, you know, discipline and efficiency in the product we're putting out there now, to make sure that we're delivering an on-time performance, to make sure everyone's following a template of efficiency in our current operations. And then finally, and the greater promise for the future, is the changes we're making to stimulate demand in our network. We believe that notwithstanding the economy, there is a pent-up demand that will respond to a higher quality product that we put out there. And it will come from a number of initiatives, you know, better partnerships with local authorities, which Giles personally has been driving. We see examples in Bristol and South Yorkshire. Network redesign, pricing initiatives, all different local market solutions. And I think that the hopeful thing is we've seen in some of the early things that Giles has rolled out a success already. So, for example, in Bristol, as I've talked about, we've increased frequency on the core routes in partnership with the local authority there, and we have seen growth rates of 5% and above. And it's these kinds of initiatives delivered locally, which we have a long list of in the offing that Giles is going to bring forward, that we feel is going to deliver a level of growth comparable to what we already see in our competitors, and we think will restore our business. We think this will take us back to a position of strength from which we can grow in UK Bus. I have to tell you, I think there's almost an inevitability to this, because if we just pull off the repositioning of the portfolio that we've talked about, that 8% margin automatically goes to double digits. We think with the more disciplined operations and the growth programs that Giles is bringing forward, it's going to add 2 or 3 points to that. And the fact of the matter is the core of our network already and still delivers quite healthy returns. And it's just about getting that to grow. There's a lot that's going to require a lot of work, and it requires management discipline. But it is in so many ways so much more straightforward an exercise than what we saw just last year in First Student. And I have to believe that the discipline we brought to that and the returns we've seen, we will also see in UK Bus with our plans. And we do have, to kind of close this off on a more positive note, kind of a symbolic good news story, of course, and that is, you know, we're the bus company that's going to take the spectators to the Olympic Games. And it's those hundreds of new buses following the games that are, we're going to cascade across our network. And they symbolically, I think, will show our employees, show our stakeholders, and show our customers that there is a refresh, a rebirth of our UK bus business. And we believe it will take us back to a position of real strength in this sector. And that takes me to UK Rail. The UK Rail team continues to deliver great results. Performance improvements, increases in revenues and volumes beyond the budgets we expected. And, you know, at this time of great change in the industry, it is worth reflecting and getting through the headlines and recognizing the tremendous success, actually, we've seen in this industry. There have been great growth in patronage. And at the same time, all of the operating companies in Network Rail have actually delivered improved operating performance in the face of that growth and improved safety performance. And as chairman of the Rail Delivery Group, you know, I'm acutely aware that the government demands much more from the industry. But I'm also aware that the government credits the fact that this industry has handled the most prolonged increase in passenger growth in modern history. And First Group's been a big part of that story, and we intend to remain a part of that story. And we've more recently distinguished ourselves, I think, as a solid partner in Network Rail in delivering major projects. We've seen it on Capital Connect Thameslink with the major new stations, new trains on ScotRail. We're delivering a new fleet on TPE. And we think this furthers our reputation with the government as a trusted partner and an important management team for rail going forward. Our new MD in rail, Vernon Barker, has taken the his distinguished accomplishments in TPE and his leadership, and he's extended that across the group to our bidding. And he recognizes, as we all do, that it's going to be, rail is largely a story about the future. And it's our performance in that bidding that will not only determine the shape of this business, but will answer many of the questions about First Group because the size of these transactions are so substantial. You know, this will be a very manic experience over the next year or so, where every 3 months, seemingly, fate's being determined by a single decision. But we just think that we have such a deep management team that at the end of the day, it will have a substantial role to play in the operation of the UK rail network going forward. So that really takes me to our summary, where, as I say, we are quite happy with the performance we've had in four of our five divisions. The turnaround in student is unfolding as we projected. Solid performance from transit. Greyhound just keeps getting bigger and more exciting. And it's a story I think that will continue to grow. A UK rail solid. And even in bus, we have a plain way forward and confidence in our plans. I think the board looks at the transformation that's already occurred in Greyhound, the transformation that is occurring in UK bus, in a student rather, and that gives it confidence that the plans we've outlined here and referred to for UK bus will be pulled off. And accordingly, as I said, they affirm their view of the long-term story for First Group and accordingly their dividend commitment to the shareholders. And with that, Nick and I would be pleased to take your questions.
Hello, Joe Thomas from HSBC. A couple of questions on the US, please, to start off with. Firstly, on the $100 million of cost savings, could you just clarify, I may have missed this, the timeline for achieving those? And are they in themselves enough to get you up to the double-digit margin, or are you assuming some sort of underlying improvement in market conditions there? The second thing is potential for disposals. You said that you've got some flexibility around the 100 million sterling target. What is the potential for outperformance against that? And finally, just sort of on a point of detail, your legal and insurance costs appear to be coming down year on year. What sort of level do you think that they will stabilize at? What's the sort of steady state there?
The 100 million timeline is what we're guiding for this coming year at 12-13, and we are optimistic there'll be further savings from that going forward. Our position is not about a massive recovery in the market, so we've not built into our expectations large volume increases over the period of getting back to double-digit margins.
I would say, however, that we are seeing, continuing what we saw last year, a much calmer market and sensible bidding environment this year, which is one of the things that's allowed us, as well as, quite frankly, our competitors, to retain business in a way we weren't able to 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the disposals, I mean, there is an opportunity for outperformance on the 100 million. We'll have to see how we get through that program. We'll probably go through in tranches, and I think we're confident with the opportunities that we see and the interest, significant interest we've had from various bidders that, you know, we will achieve the 100 million as a minimum.
Legal insurance.
I think what you're seeing there, there's a reflection in student of a reduction in the volume which came through from last year. But generally, we are seeing a reduction in claims. Our safety performance has, you know, significantly reduced the number of claims over the last 3 or 4 years. So we continue to focus on getting down the number of incidents, but we haven't built in, as I say, any major further improvement from where we are at the moment. So.
Sorry, so just circling back to the first point, which was the $100 million and the margin recovery story in the U.S. I think previously you were saying that you would get to double-digit margins without an improvement in the underlying market. Is that a slight change in nuance there?
No, we still think we'll get there largely as a result of cost savings, but it is undeniable that the fact we are assuming and have experienced no deterioration in market conditions that is allowing this job not to get harder. And I would also say, in all fairness, the kind of healthy response we've seen in the charter market, which is on the revenue side, has been a help.
Morning, Edward Stanford from Oriel. Two questions, please, if I could. First of all, Tim, I think you mentioned in your comments about the turnaround in UK Bus that if you reposition the business, you sort of automatically go to double-digit margins. I wonder if you could just provide a little bit more detail on that. And secondly, you've indicated that the yield on the fare increases was difficult in the UK. To what extent are actually high fares an impediment to turning around this business, and do you actually need to contemplate reducing your fares to make this work?
Well, there isn't much to expand on other than if you think of that pie chart I had up a moment ago, and if you dispose of a large part of those businesses, all of which have much lower margins than our core business, the arithmetic is simply that suddenly the remaining margin is in double digits. It's just the simple arithmetic of what will happen. And that's why I'm almost bold, or might say presumptuous enough, to say that there's an inevitability to this turnaround.
Was that the 100 million that you said?
Yeah.
Well, what we said, Ed, was we said we would, the 100 million was around about 130 to 140 million pounds worth of turnover. And we also indicated at the quarter four call that the likely EBIT effect on that was minimal. So if you take that effect out and you assume a slight improvement in our operating profit next year from the core business, you'll get yourself back to a double-digit margin.
And I mean, the obvious question is then why do we think we can sell that if that's the profile? And we've seen that already in the sales we did this year. The fact is these properties can be of higher value to other people depending on their networks and their operations. And they understand that, and they have a reason to go for that before someone else does. Getting to your issue of the disappointing yield, and is some of that because of high prices? Undoubtedly, yes. High prices is a relative term, but I have said before that I think that in too many territories in the past, first relied on price increases and mileage cuts as a way to protect its margin. And when times are tougher than one expects, this is the effect. And so we will have to cut prices, but we won't be cutting prices as a, you know, across the board. It's the whole issue of getting to the local networks and cutting, offering new ticket products that will generate volume sufficient that net-net you're better off. And I think that's what some of our competitors have done a very good job at. They've spent the last couple of years experimenting, understanding what works in their local operations, and it's the same thing we intend to do. So, yes, we'll definitely have to be offering more competitive offering to the public in order to attract them in tough times.
Morning. Morning, Mark Manduca from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Four questions, please. Just in regard, firstly, to provisions, can you talk through page 18 and 35, specifically the 29 million? Simply, to what extent is EBITDA being boosted by provisioning releases? My accounting's failing me on this. And should we expect the same in future? And I guess the knock-on effect of that is, what do the lenders think of that? Secondly, in regard to covenants, in terms of the covenants, is there any risk that the lenders going forward start looking at net debt to EBITDA on an ex-restricted cash basis, or even start looking at average debt? And thirdly, in regard to UK Bus, what margin did you achieve in West Yorkshire and Manchester Bus versus last year, and what number specifically is baked into your 8% margin guidance? And finally, in terms of the share price, are there any board-wide expectations or plans to start buying stock, or do you plan on doing a buyback instead of a dividend at some point?
Should I take the first three?
Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of the provisions, well, the provisions is largely as we would expect. There's always a permanent difference between, you've got to take into account, if you look in the accounts, the notional interest, which is charged through the interest line and not through the operating line, and that's been there for many, many years, and that's about 19 million of that movement. There was then £6 million worth of legal claims that we settled, a large meal and break claim, which we had on the balance sheet for a number of years, which has now been settled through for cash. And then there's about a £2 or £3 million other movement. So I would hope that people won't be concerned by that. That's settling of claims and the normal runoff of the notional interest. In terms of the covenants, now our covenants are fairly clear. The covenants are calculated on a consistent basis and a consistent accounting basis. So, no, I don't see any prospect of that. And what was the second one, the UK?
Margin.
In
Yorkshire.
Oh, yeah, well, UK bus margin last year. Well, we're not going to go through individual bus operating margins here, but I can say that our 8% margin is built up from the ground. So it includes any reduction in margins in Manchester or Leeds within that 8%.
As far as the board, what they do in terms of stock purchases will speak for itself. It is up to them, and I don't think any further commentary is appropriate for me. I will say that, as I said, the board has affirmed its current payout policy, and that's as much as I think it would be appropriate to say, and it doesn't involve a stock buyback.
Damien Burr, RBC. Two questions, please. First of all, on the scale of the group, you've obviously done a lot of work and there's a lot more to do. If you're starting from a clean slate, would you really want to have potentially seven divisions if you include vehicle services and London buses, if you like, different economic operating models? And, you know, when you think about this in an ideal scenario, do you think First Group would be potentially better as a slimmer, more focused organization? And then the second question really is on the efficiency changes, both in the UK bus and student. Obviously, it's a path we've been down before since buying Laidlaw and a sort of constant round of restructuring the UK bus. Could you give us a little bit more feeling of what you think makes the process different this time and more sustainable in both organizations, particularly in student, but also with regards to UK bus? Thank you.
Where we are with the group, we've said we're all operations are core to us. We think we derive strength in the diversity of our operations, and yet they all involve the same key management skills, which allow us to move learnings from one division to the other. And we're not wedded to any business, and we've always said that we would do the right thing as viewed by the shareholders in terms of any options for disposals. But right now, we think the core challenge for us is to improve earnings, both in student and in UK bus, and that's where we're focused right now. As far as, you know, what's different? Well, in all of these businesses, you know, this isn't high energy physics. This is a transport business, and it's pretty basic. It's about assembling networks efficiently, recruiting people, training them appropriately, and then operating them in a way that is most efficient and responds to the needs of the market. And I think when you go through a period of consolidations and a lot of that people talk about synergies, and I think there are very real synergies that get delivered, but often when they're delivered from the top, it involves, you know, the big easy gestures, the closing of the headquarters, the getting rid of one of this or one of that. And the real hard work is putting it all together, employing best practice at the local level, and making sure that you really drive an ownership of the business locally. And that is what is different this time in student. I would invite you, any of you, I would gladly have you go out and tour the place and talk to people on the front line. You would be shocked by how people have embraced this program. The same thing has to happen in UK bus, but for an even more important reason, and that is the way out of this for UK bus is local initiative. It's a more entrepreneurial way of looking at your business. You can't simply cut your prices. You've got to put out products that respond to local needs. And you can't do that sitting at headquarters, pretending like you have answers to everything. What you have to do is find a way of employing the intelligence of people at the local level, following, you know, appropriate controls and procedures to experiment and find the right answers. And so you do need change that is owned locally. So what we've been able to accomplish in student, it's that kind of spirit and ownership we've got to see in UK bus, and that's what's different. But I think anytime you try to run one of these efficiency programs, that's every management's objective, and they don't always pull it off.
Yes, Pete Hyde from Liberum. Couple of questions. Just on Greyhound in Canada, could you just talk a bit more about how you see, I don't know whether you want to call them subsidy packages or margins moving, you know, obviously it's turned break even or turned into a profit, but, you know, how far can you drive that business? Second point, I suppose, coming back to UK bus, you've talked about a bit about pricing, but I'm not quite sure what you think you can do over the next 12 months. I mean, are you generally going to see prices going up, or do you think, in response to sort of Edward's question, you might be pushing prices down overall in order to drive volume? And I'm sort of intrigued, and I know you won't be precise, but what you kind of have put in there, business by business or overall, in order to get that 8% margin. And then finally, coming back to, I suppose, cash flow, dividends, et cetera, one question I'd be quite interested in is whether you think net debt reduction or net debt to EBITDA reduction is kind of still up there in the board's focus, and also what you think the longer-term dividend cover of this kind of group should be. Thanks.
Greyhound in Canada first. I'll take, you know, what's different about Greyhound in Canada from Greyhound in the U.S. is that it's been a regulated business, and the regulation, it comes from the provinces. And so it hasn't, Greyhound struggled to do the kind of tough surgery that it underwent in the U.S., stripping down its network to a core sustainable network, because it was regulated in Canada and it didn't have that ability to do it. So there were long protracted negotiations. And as you, if you know, and I'm sure you do, in Canada, everybody lives within 200 miles of that border. And yet there was a requirement to run buses in some interesting places that no one got on. In fact, 25% of the business in Canada in Greyhound is moving packages. And so it is about protecting our presence there by working out arrangements with these provinces to run networks that at least, you know, cover our costs. That business is never going to be, you know, the source of great wealth to us. But it is about then allowing us to, on an unregulated basis, exploit what are very real commercial opportunities in Canada, just as viable as we see in the U.S. And so we do see the ability to generate margins for our Greyhound Express operations in Canada comparable to what we see in the U.S. And we will continue to explore those. As far as UK bus, the real answer to this question is it's about volume improvement. That's what we have to get. And so whether it's about the need to reduce certain prices in certain markets, the real issue is can we generate more volume on our buses to improve our margin because of the load factor on those buses? And that is what we're really pushing. I forget what the third question was.
It was about the
dividend.
The cash flow and net debt to EBITDA.
Yeah, it was sort of... Is there a focus on reducing net debt to EBITDA and or what's the appropriate medium-term dividend cover?
There definitely is a continuing focus on this. But the thing about our profile, if you look at it, debt isn't going up. Debt is not our issue. Our issue is earnings. It's the other side of that ratio we have to solve. And 75% of the invested capital is in UK bus and in student.
We have got to drive improved performance and greater earnings to justify the deployment of those of that much capital in those businesses. And that is something the board understands. And that's why, as I said at the half-year call, the issue isn't disposing of units that are already delivering good earnings for us. The issue is about generating earnings where we don't have it, where we already are devoting a lot of capital to the business. So, and the board is very focused on this. It remains a core goal of ours to maintain our investment grade rating and indeed to drive to BBB ultimately. But the board understands that they won't get there unless we have the resources to also make sure that we can support this turnaround in our business.
Yeah. Just on that Greyhound margin, I mean, the Canadian blended margin, what we were saying is will rise, but it will probably still be below what the U.S. margins are achievable because of the difference in the mix of the business. I mean, in terms of dividend cover was the other point. You know, our dividend cover this year is 1.7 times. Last year it was 1.9 times. You know, around that sort of level over the long term is the sort of level that you would expect a business like this to be, probably around about 2 times, 1.9 times.
Good morning. It's Alice Brunner at UBS. Just a couple of questions, please, sort of leading on from previous ones. Just with regards to UK bus and on the disposals, in terms of the 100 million target that you have, is that an assumption of just selling the non-core, less profitable businesses, or do you think that potentially you'd have to include some sort of sweetener, more profitable businesses within that, just in terms of, you know, the response that you've had from bidders on that? Then with regards to the dividend, the sustainability going forward, in terms of 7% growth, do you look at that on an ex-rail basis, or looking at, you know, the upcoming franchise expiries, could you give us some commentary on what would happen if, in a bear case scenario, you lost, you know, a few franchises, if that dividend would still be sustainable going forward? Thank you very much.
We are, and this is why I went through the introduction I did when I discussed UK bus. I want to emphasize the point that we are committed to our UK bus business, and we believe it offers great value, and we have no interest in selling off elements of that franchise that we think are going to be the one of the great contributors to our future going forward. So, no, this is about a program of selling businesses that we think others could do more with, and we don't intend to be offering sweeteners, as you put it, in disposing of the businesses that we think have a great future. With regard to what happens to the dividend if we should exit the rail business, we don't anticipate exiting the rail business, but what the board has done is reaffirmed its current dividend policy, which it, under its own schedule, will be reconsidering at the end of the current commitment, and it will no doubt have much greater information about rail at that time and would consider what it has to do then.
Eleanor Price from Insight. As a bondholder, I want to probe you a bit more on your commitment to the retention of investment grade rating. I mean, at the moment, you seem to be on the right track to retain it. But if there were to be any sort of earnings shocks going forward, or perhaps not the economic recovery that you expect, would you consider potentially reducing the dividend payout in order to retain the investment grade rating? In other words, I'm trying to find out what your commitment is to that at the expense potentially of your shareholders.
Well, I mean, the board is quite aware that it has to be a balanced approach, and investment grade rating is important to us. What's really important for the board and for all of us is that we can deliver capital to this business so to realize the value we should generate based on the commercial opportunity we're looking at. And any change that would result in our not being able to do that, obviously the board would have to take action. And indeed, any prospect of that, I would assume the board would act well before we ever got to this eventuality you're talking about, which we believe we're nowhere close to. So I'm completely comfortable that the board is weighing all this appropriately and that we would take appropriate action if we ever got anywhere near that point.
I think the board also has a history of managing the balance sheet to ensure that we keep that, and we've taken action in the past when required.
Thanks. Paul Hickman at Peel Hunt. Just a couple of questions from me. Just in the current period in UK bus, I wonder if you could comment whether there's been any changes compared with the trends that you highlighted at the pre-close. In particular, any trends on the yield against the January price increase? And secondly, also just thinking back to the pre-close, I think there was some discussion about the effect of potential disposals on that 8% margin guidance and some possibility that the net might be higher than that, obviously subject to the timing of any disposals. Would you like to comment on that as well? Thanks.
Well, on the current trends, we haven't seen any particular change in those trends over the recent two trading periods through March and through April. It is quite difficult in terms of analysing out April's performance when you've got an Easter moving. There's a lot of adjustments that you have to make to get a like for like. So we haven't seen any particular trends, but I think May will be a better indication. In terms of the disposals, yeah, the 8% guidance that I have given is pre-disposals. So, yes, you can run the numbers through. If you take out revenues with little profit effect, that will clearly affect the margin this year.
Morning. Jamie Robotham from Morgan Stanley. Three questions. If I can first go back to school bus and Joe's point right at the start, just to be clear, you've identified scope for an additional $35 million worth of savings, but there doesn't appear to be any increase in the outlook on profitability for that division next year. You know, is there some additional underlying margin erosion that's going to absorb the savings? And linked into that, I was interested in the comment on the retention rates. You say they're still above 90%. There's around, I think it was 300 buses worth of net new business. But all in, does that actually still mean a declining book of business for First Group in school bus in fiscal 13? And alongside that, could you provide any comments on why First Group isn't growing its way out of the current dip in profitability in US school bus? Second, on rail, You took a provision last year against the losses to expiry on First Great Western. Could you give us an idea of the cash operating loss at Great Western this year and whether that's likely to be any different next year, given that you're in revenue support? I'd have thought there's pretty reasonable visibility on that. And thirdly and finally, just coming to sort of cash generation, you spend a bit of time on the fixed asset additions, which I notice are still roughly in line with the group's depreciation charge. I just wondered whether, as part of the turnaround story, in particular in UK bus, does there need to come a point where that CapEx spend starts being above the group's depreciation charge as you invest more to try and turn the business around? And also on cash pension contributions, you made additional deficit cash contributions at Greyhound in UK bus. Should we expect to repeat next year? Thanks.
Right. Well, the $35 million that we came out with an increase from $65 million to $100 million, there isn't any further deterioration. I think most people, when you went through the numbers in terms of bridging our gap, would realize that we would need to generate more savings. And what we are doing today is confirming that we have generated those savings in our numbers.
As far as the retention rate and the profile of the business, what I said is there was about 300 buses taken in conversion opportunities. That obviously is outsourced opportunities that weren't in the market before. We've taken about something like 200 buses in share shift. And if our retention rate, which is in the low 90s, well above 90%, though, that leaves us with a net reduction in buses of a couple of hundred, say around 400, before we consider whether we want to purchase any tuck-in bus operations. I would point out that if you go through in your mind the press releases of our competitors, the way most people grow in this business is by that last category, by buying up other bus companies, and the figure I've given you is before we go there. And it makes sense, it seems to me, and I've said this before, I said this last year when I talked about this plan, to not put a big emphasis on growing there when what you want to make sure is that this core operation is running appropriately and that you have a template and a way of operation that can generate sustainable returns. And you can then take that to the market where you will start to, again, enter the market of buying up competitors. We have this enormous profile in the business, and I think growing it is not the critical point. The critical point is making sure we have margins that more than cover our cost of capital. And I've said, when we pass that threshold, we will be back in the market buying up the bus companies that keep coming to us and asking us if we're interested. I think at that point, you have a credible growth story. I think to move now, you don't grow out of it. You just complicate the management challenge you're facing.
In terms of Great Western, if you remember, we put up a provision last year of almost $60 million, and we anticipated a loss this year in 11-12 of about $11 million. We've actually done slightly better than that. Revenue growth was slightly stronger, and we've only made a loss of around about £3 million. So that leaves us with about £57 million, which is what we expect the loss to be next year, the fuel cost taking up the offset from the favorable position this year. But of that loss, over £40 million of that is depreciation. So you're around about £16-17 million of loss. And the last one,
for the pension contributions.
CapEx to depreciation and
pension. CapEx in UK bus, well, we've, as I said, we talked about the 1,000 new buses. I think we have to continue to invest in buses in UK bus and make sure that we have a fleet that will be in a position to excite the public and respond. I'm not seeing any increase in the overall capital program in any way. Some of the increase this year is largely because we had capital in transit to an extent we don't usually have, in that they invested in buses to support expansion in the shuttle business, which was the only business they participated in that requires capital. But I do think we're going to have to, and we are committed to steadily investing in our UK bus fleet.
And pension contributions broadly the same this year, probably slightly below. Rail is going to be slightly lower, but no further increase in those deficit repayments.
John Koo from Espirito Santo. Three questions. Going to the issue of the mix of the group, you've talked about the complexity of the student business and the challenge of the turnaround, and you also talked in the UK about effectively cutting off the underperforming tail. Do you see an opportunity or a need to do much the same in the student business? Is there a similar spread of margins and performance where actually there is a small proportion of the business dragging the average down? Secondly, in Canada, I'm trying to understand the structure of that market. We talked about the regulated side of the business where you can't really do much other than negotiate with the provinces and the commercial opportunities on the other side. Are the two businesses joined at the hip? Do you have to be in the regulated side? And finally, on retention rates in school bus, you've talked about being over 90%. Can you just run me through the basis of calculation? Does that include contracts? So within the 90% retained, do you include presumably contracts which were not up for tender in a given year? And if so, what do you think your marginal retention rate on business that was at risk in the year was?
Okay. With regard to the magnitude of the challenge in student, and would it benefit from a similar approach that we've described in UK bus of selling off operations that don't generate a sufficient return? In essence, that's what's happened in student, and it's reflected in the answer to the prior question of the prior gentleman. It's by bidding up as unremunerative traffic comes up for bid, by increasing your margin in the bid you put in and being willing to lose the business, that you're in essence shedding that tail. It's just that you have a friend, you know, you have an operating territory, you own it in a UK bus, rather than give it away, you're better off selling it in student, the way the business model works, you just naturally surrender it by the bid you put in. As far as Canada, no, you don't have to be in the regulated business to introduce the new product. But our view is that for a lot of reasons, dealing with stakeholders and others, and our long history in Canada, if we can find a way to make the Canadian business down to a profitable core, we're better off cooperating to the government and getting there. And we have made great strides in that direction. As you've noted, in 1 year, you know, we've completely eliminated a $20 million deficit, and it's now marginally profitable. And we think the better way to kind of preserve our name and our presence in the market is to work with the governments on the regulated side.
The 90% is on the buses which are at risk.
Right. Yeah. It's not for the whole. It's our results on only that portion at risk. And it is, I think, worth noting, if you think about, these are 3 to 5 year contracts generally. And we talked about this, you know, painful phenomenon we went through following the collapse of municipal finance in the United States and the churn that started happening year after year. If you assume those numbers, this should be about the last year of when those pre-recessionary contracts came up for bid, the last 20 to 30% of them. And, you know, in times like this, you do look for that silver lining, and I think that's one of them we see.
Hi, Tim. Sorry, one more question. Just following on from Nick's comments around the 1.7 times dividend cover, just in terms of the math that we've just been going through. So if we take the pension effect from IAS, so let's call it somewhere between 60 and 70 million, and then add on the comments that I made about provisioning, how comfortable are you about having that 1.7 times in 2014? So I guess less about 2013. You said you're committing to 7%, so I'll take it as read. But for 2014 specifically, you mentioned that you feel comfortable with 1.7 times based on those two things, pension and provisioning. You know, even if you take the V-shaped recovery in UK bus that you've talked about, how is that possible on the maths?
Mark, what I said was over the medium term, we would expect it to be around that period of time. I didn't pinpoint any 1 year in particular where it would be that. So I think what we'll see as we progress through the rail bidding cycle and where we stock that and we increase earnings there and we see the fruits of our recoveries come through in both further improvement in student and in UK bus, we will see that cover will come back up. Obviously, you know, we've quoted that number at the moment based on the current accounting position. When we get the other side of the other accounting, we'll have to review where that sits, as we will with any other companies within that. But that change in accounting on the pensions things is a non-cash adjustment, and we have to remember that. You know, that difference is already running through our cash flow, as we can see the cash flow here.